When I was doing activism, I realized I was so angry all the time. Just like constantly, just like I was that person like screaming, like during protests, just like crying, screaming, because especially everything we're doing is for community, it can feel really easy to feel guilty for, you know, just reading a book all day or just like spending 3 hours scrolling through TikToks. I've been learning to really notice when I'm in survival mode. That's usually when I'm going and saying yes to everything.
I had no idea you were a big deal when I met you at the Asian Mental Health Project event. I did background research on you like I do for any good podcast host, and I was like, holy moly, 104,000 Instagram followers. Like, I don't mind, like, feature, like, your art is incredible. I knew you were an incredible artist because your booth was, like, art-driven, and your graphics were incredible, but I'm curious about what came first. Was it the dream to become an influencer, or were you already good at art and you were already artistic?
Yeah, no, I definitely would have thought I'd ever be an influencer. Trust me, like, I was not ever on, like, my life bingo cards. Yeah, I've always been very, like, artistically in tune. I went to LaGuardia in New York City for high school, which is, it's like a performing arts high school for art. I've always, like, had that knack. And I think in 2021, during, like, Stop Asian Hate, it's kind of when, like, I was able to use that to make infographics. The influencer stuff came, like so surprisingly in 2021. I think that's when a lot of companies were like, let's be a part of this. But yeah, that was, they came to me and it was a huge surprise, trust me.
Yeah, I read somewhere, I think it was on your LinkedIn, that you saw rooted Asian American hate in a television show and you got 47,000 signatures. You're featured on like the New York Times, things like that. And when you talk about it being a surprise, like, tell me what that was like. It, like, that was only 2 years ago.
I don't know what went through my mind at the time. I think it was just a lot of anger, because it was, I was like checking the news and every day it was like a new Asian person seemingly getting attacked or hate crimed. And I think just seeing that every day just made me feel like, okay, what can I do? And what's the most accessible thing for me to do? Because it was also like the height of COVID and I couldn't really leave the house. So social media was the most accessible thing for me. For that petition specifically, I was watching TV shows at the time and I was like asking myself, wow, like, you know, is this, you know, pushing racist stereotypes for Asians? And that segment did, in my opinion, push like racial stereotypes about like our foods. And so that propagated me to just like create like a petition and TikToks about it. But trust me, looking back, I was like, wow, it was just like just going off of full activation mode. So yeah.
Yeah. Is that what started this whole like somatic healing journey, or were you already on that healing kick? For people who don't know what somatic healing is, though, can you give an overview of what that is and get into your own healing journey?
Yeah, for sure. So somatic healing, for most, if not like all Asian cultures, we've always done this. It's always been a part of our culture. Like yoga is somatic healing. Breath work is somatic healing. Just anything that has to do with the body. Acupuncture is also somatic healing. So I do something called somatic activated healing, where we use like a combination of meditation, breath work, dance, ecstatic dance, and like speaking affirmations to basically like drop back into the body. No, that was never anything I thought I'd be doing either.
Dang. So literally, all of this came out 2 years ago.
Yeah. It was like beginning of last year, actually. So it's this is super new to me still, but the reason why I was so interested in the healing space, I mean, mental health has always been super important to me, but when I was doing activism, I realized I was so angry all the time, just like constantly, just like I was that person like screaming, like during protests, just like crying, screaming. All of like my white friends, like I couldn't be friends with them, right? Because I was like, you're white and therefore like I'm your enemy, you know, all of that. And so I basically in 2022 got COVID twice. So I think that was a sign that like my body was stressing the F out and I needed another way to look at things. And so, yeah, basically through the help of so many mentors, I started to look at humanity a different way, tapped into Buddhist philosophy. And anyway, now it's like the beginning of my journey. Doing somatic healing, got my certification for that. And it's just been like, yeah, it's been a wild, like 2 years, trust me. So
that's insane. It's incredible what can happen. Like if you've ever read the book Atomic Habits, James Clear writes that time magnifies all good and bad habits, where our consequences are often like investments, things like that, often compound with time. And it's crazy to me how within the span of 670 days, you've managed to be a completely different person than who you were before, where you took all that anger and you channeled it towards healing. And I'm curious about like the physical presentation of who you were 2 years ago to who you are now, like the physical differences you're noticing, like your relational, spiritual practices, like how you relate to others, how that's changed through somatic healing.
Yeah, I'll give you a peak example because this is exactly how I know my perspective has changed. So my partner's white. In 2021, I didn't know how to deal with my feelings of constant like racial anger. Just like I was so angry like all the time in 2021. Actually, like I was having a really hard time communicating with his parents who are white and much older. And because of that, like I cut off relationships with them because I was like, I could not see them eye to eye. Any like little miscommunication on their end, I took it as racism straight up. And we weren't on speaking terms for all of last year. I couldn't speak with them. And mind you, my partner and I were dating for now like 5 years, so we've been in a long-term relationship. And imagine just like based off of like this fuel and anger, which is valid in some extent, but in another way I didn't know how to express it in a healthy way. So I started going to therapy after that, and then I went through somatic healing and I realized like, when we are constantly in fight, flight, or freeze response, we can think, or just myself, like I can think that anyone who disagrees with me is the enemy, or I need to like either fight them or run away. So just learning about the body and learning about, you know, just going to therapy first and foremost, has allowed me to see a different perspective than just like my traumatized, traumatized, activated nervous system mind.
I love all of your Instagram posts and social media posts because I can see how your transparency and healing process is reflective of what you post. Like it made me laugh as like another former I am a Filipino woman. But when you talked about when your mom criticizes your body and your entire identity, but then she buys you new shoes. Like I didn't understand why she was doing that. I think that your ability to capture the nuance in like a social media post and a piece of artistry, like your Pinterest stuff, your Instagram stuff, it really does show like what being able to be real about what's inside of you can do. Can you tell me about like the beginning process of that as an artist, of what it was like to just be in the raw in a therapy room and like unpack that?
Yeah. Like in therapy, like talking to a therapist. Yeah.
Like what was that like? Had you ever been like super raw and honest like that before?
I think I've always just been like, especially after college, because in college I was just drinking a lot, smoking a lot. And I think that has really, like, my college experience made me mask a lot. Like, I needed to be a certain somebody to be cool enough, to be accepted enough. And I think when I got laid off from my job 2 years out of college, it was in 2019, I really just started to unpack generational wounds. And I realized, like, at the base of my being, I don't like being put on a pedestal. I don't like barriers of communication, and I just really love being honest with people. I started going to therapy in 2019, and it was hard. It was hard because going to therapy for the first time, you're asked questions that maybe you've never really thought about. I remember my therapist, my first therapist, he asked about like my dad and my mom, and I couldn't talk to him about that. It was so uncomfortable. And he told me this analogy. He said, you know, going to therapy is like taking a water bottle and like having a bunch of sand at the bottom of the water bottle. And then you go to therapy and you shake the bottle and all the sand is like going throughout the bottle. Like, you know, so he says it's really important to do aftercare and all of that. But yeah, I think now, like, it's been 2019, my therapy journey was, like, 3-4 years in the making. It's helped me just be comfortable with knowing that vulnerability is our superpower. We won't really be able to heal and get to the nitty-gritty if we're not comfortable expressing that this happened to us. Like, that was a big thing in my journey, recognizing that in order to connect with other Asian Americans, I had to be okay with being really vulnerable. Otherwise, to me, like, it just doesn't feel as genuine or it doesn't feel as authentic. And I like to just tell this to people, which is, I'm not the type of person who, like, meets someone and talks about, like, what's your favorite color? Or like how, like, you know, I've always been the type of person that just wanted to ask people, like, how is your heart doing today? Oh, like, how are you? Oh, you're not doing great. Why? Like, why is that? And getting to the nitty gritty, because I think nowadays, like, cultivating very authentic relationships requires vulnerability and honesty. I don't know if that answered your question, just being super real
with
you.
That did answer my question. That was such a good answer, because I feel like you live that out, Kim, so authentically. Like, our first conversation, I told you about my Filipino ancestry. We had like a whole hour long conversation about that. And you kind of emanate a sense of realness where I do feel like I'm talking to an equal. I don't feel like I'm talking to someone that thinks that they're better. And I don't want to miss that part that you said, because I think it was so golden. You were like, I don't like being put on a pedestal. I don't like barriers between me and other people. I'm sure that because of your like stature now with what's happened in the last 2 years, your advocacy, like you putting your art out there, people have almost put you here when you just want to look people in the eye, like all your speaking gigs, all of that. How do you meet people eye to eye? How do you ground yourself in that humility when all people want to do is to like look up? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's been something that I've, it's been, that's a journey that I'm like on now, where To be super transparent, I went to an event yesterday and someone came up to me. She was like, I love all of your work. Like, you've helped me heal all of these things. And I love that. And I appreciate that. But there's like a certain uncomfortableness that I feel. And I think there are two things that come with that. One, like I'm being the center of attention. I know I'm like on social media and that's what I do, but it's like so weird for me when we're not like in social media world. I think being the center of attention for me has always been like really crunchy. And I think that's just something for me to work on. But secondly, I very, very much believe that everyone has the power to do exactly what I'm doing in their own specific way. And what I'm doing is just what I've always been passionate about, which is just like community building, community healing. But everyone has that power, like to do probably what I'm doing and better, you know, like there's nothing that I have that someone else doesn't have, you know? And I think when we get caught up in the ego and like the vanity metrics, and it's just really easy to get into a space where you think you're better than everyone else because of what an imaginary platform that isn't even tangible. Like you can't even, it's not even a tangible thing. Instagram and TikTok can leave at any time. It's when we get caught up in that, I think it takes away from the impact because we're, you know, I don't know. I'll say this last thing because I know I've been, wow, like doing this podcast made me realize that I need to die, like tone it, like take deep breaths because I've been so busy this month. But something I've realized in my work is if you can help one human being truly, genuinely, and authentically, and not expect anything back, that's how I personally know that I'm doing the work. Because on social media, I don't know, I have a lot of feelings on social media, and where it becomes like intention versus impact is something I always think about a lot of like, you're making the posts, you're making the graphics, you're making the content, but how does that translate to like helping someone? Like, and that's why for me, conversations matter. Having coaching clients where I'm like helping them process in person really matters to me. Volunteering really matters to me. The social media stuff is just a tool. Wow. I rambled.
you didn't ramble, Kim. You really didn't. A couple of things that I heard you say was, I feel like you don't want to glorify social media. It's just like an outlet to express your messaging and help people in some way. And another thing I heard you say was there's a difference between impact and intention, where you have to ground yourself in the reason why you're doing it, meet with clients in person, be able to volunteer, be able to meet people on the ground level, and just work with people one-on-one. And I'm sure that you weren't always there, you know, like that, I feel like has a story, that journey to getting to a place where you're like, Instagram and TikTok, they can disappear overnight. What was that realization? Like, how long did that realization take for you?
Maybe all of last year. And I mean ongoing, because even TikTok right now, I keep in touch with the space, and TikTok is very much like, you never know if it's going to still be here at any time. But when I think of, I constantly remind myself of that. And I think, well, if these platforms were to disappear tomorrow, how can I still be doing what I'm doing, which is helping community in the best way that I can, or uplifting other Asian women? Like, how can I be doing that? Yeah, I think about that often. And I think as a creator, for me, I just have newsletters. So newsletters is something that I tell all like BIPOC business owners like to have, because so that's yours, you know, that's how you communicate with your audiences. Second thing is getting involved with community. So, for example, we met during Asian Mental Health Projects event. And so when I created my booth for that event, it was completely free. People literally could have come up and made free jewelry. So finding ways to remove barriers, right? Like, you know, because for many people, cost is a barrier. So getting really creative to see how we can still connect with folks. And I think when we are able to tap into that, and like social media is one thing, but impact in person just feels so different. I don't know. I feel like it just feels more fulfilling for me. I don't know. But taking away, realizing that social media is really just a tool has been so important for me on this journey, because it's easy to get caught up in all of the vanity metrics.
It really is. It really is. I feel like you've opened my eyes to so much of the need for human contact. You know, there's something so vulnerable about being able to see someone in a physical form, because you can see their essence and you can see like their internal spirit when they're walking into a room. You can't hide behind like a text or a picture. You end up meeting that person face to face. And I feel like, I don't know, you give off that energy of very humble and open. I don't want to miss this part, because I feel like we talked about it in separate forms, where we talked about your somatic healing journey and your personal journey. Mm-hmm. And then we also talked about balancing in-person community care with collective care through media. Mm-hmm. Community wouldn't be community without the letter U. And so in the same way, like, we've touched on this a little bit, and I don't want the audience to like miss out on this. Like, there was a time when you did advocacy and you were always angry, and then you reached a place of burnout, you encountered job loss. And so 2019, 2020 was a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about how you continue to take care of yourself. You know, at the time of this recording, June is Pride Month, May was AAPI and Mental Health Month, which all three you advocate for. Mm-hmm. How are you taking care of yourself with all of this going on?
Yeah. And I mean, just before this recording, you asked me, how am I? And I was just like, oh girl, it's been a constant go yeah. since May. And so here's the thing for me as a business owner, I don't work on Fridays. It's been like, I think that's the freedom with what I do now versus a 9-to-5 when I was working a 9-to-5, is having time and being able to control my time a bit more. But for me, one of the hardest boundaries is that I do not work Fridays. Like, I will be offline. I think a second thing is, what used to help me a lot is scheduling out in my Google Calendar when I will not be doing anything. Like, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., you won't be doing anything. You know, I think I've been learning to really notice when I'm in survival mode. And that's usually when I'm going and saying yes to everything. When I say yes to everything and I'm working on Friday mornings, that's how I know I need to check myself. Because urgency, that capitalistic concept where we feel like if we don't do this thing, then we're going to miss out on something, is just like not serving my nervous system. It's like just not, but
that's so good.
I'm being really honest right now. I'm not perfect. Like, I've been on the go since May, since you and I met each other for that event. And I need to schedule time to just decompress. And what that looks like for me when I'm decompressing, I go to acupuncture, which I really like, or just like Reiki energy healing. It's actually really, really helped me, especially when I can't, like, my body is just like constantly anxious. I need someone to help me just like like now. I'm probably going to go this week. So
I love what you said. I love that you're honest about your process. Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
About my personal life. So my grandma is one of my best friends. And I told you before starting this call that I had like, I got really sick, like to the point where my throat, like I couldn't even speak on Saturday, and it's Monday at the time of this recording. So I was like, holy moly, like I'm interviewing Kim on Monday. How am I supposed to get through this? And like, I hadn't ever taken a weekend off. Like I'm constantly on the go, constantly on the go. Even when I'm not working, like over the weekend, I'll do errands or I'll keep myself busy. I almost call myself like the Terminator version of Arnold Schwarzenegger, like female. And then like I started noticing in the first week of June that I would get irritable all the time, like snap at my grandma whenever we would spend time together. And then when I got sick, I just noticed that I looked at the time. I kept looking at time. I was like, okay, 1 o'clock, I would probably wash my car. 2 o'clock, I would go grocery shopping. Like 4 o'clock, I would be at the gym. I was like, oh, I'm just laying in bed and reading my book all day. And I got to talk to my grandma, and I just like would watch her take care of me. And I had this epiphany. I was like, how often do I hurry myself to be this person of urgency, to be this person of productivity, when my grandma is 85, you know, she's aging, and like, who knows where she'll be in a couple months, in a couple years, you know? And like, sometimes I feel like I can miss out on life or miss out on relationships because I have an agenda. And I had that epiphany before meeting with you today. And I'm so grateful for your vulnerability, Kim, because I feel like this story was birthed out of us being able to relate on that level, you know?
Yeah. No, I hear you. And thank you so much for sharing, because it's really challenging, I find, to talk about this urgency, this sense of urgency, especially, I mean, you mentioned that you do Yellow Chair Collective and you also have other things on the side that you do. And it's just like, well, how do we balance all of that without the guilt? Because especially if everything we're doing is for community, it can feel really easy to feel guilty for, you know, just reading a book all day or just like spending 3 hours scrolling through TikToks or whatever it is. So thank you for sharing that, because it's so, so real. And shout out to your grandma who's 85 years old. And you spending
helping
time
with my flu.
Oh my God. Shout out to your grandma, because that
she's so real.
Wow.
She's incredible. I also feel like now that we're both talking, I had this other realization too. I was like, is Filipino women, I feel like it's in our bones almost to be people who are constantly giving to others. Like, I'm sure, I don't know what your mom's like, but my mom is always doing something. Like, she always taught me to be useful, to be resourceful, like to be good with our money. I'm curious about what it was like growing up for you.
Yeah, same. And I mean, even to this day, I went home to my mom last, like maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and I stayed with my parents, and it's so interesting, first of all, going back home as an adult and like living with my parents. It was like going back in a time machine. But noticing my mom, everything was always for someone else. And I'm going to say this about my mom specifically. I love her. And in the same breath, she is super Catholic, super Catholic. She teaches Sunday school, like to this day. And so with my mom, she fundamentally believes that you have to, you know, give yourself to like everyone else around you, because that's what God said to do. Like, you have to be selfless in order to be worthy.
Wow.
that's something she fundamentally believes in. And I could see that through just noticing her and my dad's marriage, how she like obeys my dad, or, you know, how she just like puts family back home in the Philippines first and sends money back home, even though she doesn't really have a retirement savings. Just noticing that has made me, you know, take those lessons, come back home to where I live and say, wow, that's really sad. That's, you know, kind of screwed. But in the same breath, what a blessing that I have a chance in this lifetime to actually not repeat those patterns and to build my own thing without, you know, feeling like I have to be selfless to be worthy, you know?
That's so powerful, because like Filipino culture, like historically, so many people were taught to immigrate so they could send money back home. And there's almost like a feeling of indebtedness and feeling of guilt. And the nuance and the weight of having to handle that as a child of an immigrant, I think it's a lot, because a part of you is saying like, I respect my mom. This is what I'm hearing you say. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I respect my mom. I love my mom. But at the same time, I also know that there's a part of me that wants to see me and doesn't want to shed so much of myself that I become a shadow of who I used to be. And so what did that like work? What does that work look like for you day in and day out?
Yeah. And ooh, you said that so, so eloquently. I love that. Oh my goodness.
It's the therapist in me.
I love that. Yeah, I think so. On my journey, it's just been a constant, maybe a pause and a reflection. You know, I think even in the work I do today, which is like community building and advocacy, I still feel that guilt so much. I feel, you know, like I have to constantly be turned on for community. Otherwise, like this thing could happen and I wasn't there, right? To like help in my own way.
What does that look like? What does it look like to be turned on? Like, just, who do you have to be?
It's just sometimes I you know, it's funny. I'm actually going to see a therapist about this, because I was telling the therapist, I'm like, sometimes I feel like I have to perform Kim. I'm like performing Kim. Yeah, it gets really interesting. And
I heard Billie Eilish say that. She
really?
Like in an interview. If you listen to an interview she did with Zane Lowe, like just look up Apple Music, Billie Eilish. She says that sometimes she feels like she has to act like Billie. She's like, hold up, I'm Billie, but I have to act like Billie, you know? Is that born out of like posting stuff online, or is it just from what you think other people think about you because you've been doing community building for so long?
I think it's both. I think it's both, because it never used to be a thing. I never used to feel that way until maybe like last year, where I realized like, wow, like why? I'll give you an example. Same example that I gave you earlier, which is this girl came up to me yesterday at an event. She was like, you are such an inspiration. I love what you do. And I'm just like standing here and I'm like, what goes through the back of my mind is like, what did I do? Like, why? And I couldn't understand it. And my partner was on the right hand side of me, and he always reminds me, he's like, you're so like, you're amazing. You're, you know, you're really doing so much for our for community. And he's like complimenting me. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, and so when I go to public events, sometimes I feel like I'm a different person. It's almost similar to how like Beyonce, when she goes on stage, she's like Sasha Fierce. And get it now, because it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, and it's a weird thing that I actually am going to therapy specifically for this.
That's hilarious. Weird.
Yeah.
That's hilarious, because I literally, that was my follow-up question. I was like, how do you manage like the image of being Kim Syra and then being Kim Syra. That was
it's
my question.
It's so weird. I mean, because, I don't have an answer to it because I'm like, how does...
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It's so weird because like technically you are you. Like you're this bright, bubbly, colorful artist, activist person. But you're also a human with like so many multifaceted characteristics that people might not see online because you don't want to share all of you online.
True.
And so I'm curious about like, are there parts of you that you kind of keep, this is just for me and my partner, or this is just for me to know? Like, how do you know what to post online as like an influencer and as like this person that's struggling with a dissonance between who people see you as, who you really are?
So this is what came to mind immediately when you said that question, which is not everyone will resonate with my content. I always remind myself of that. You will not be for everyone, and that's okay. Like, it's so true. I'll give you an example. I made the reel recently about how my mom like lectured me on my weight and my job and then bought me shoes. And so people did not understand that. Like in the comments, they were like, this is not okay. Like all of these things. And I was like, wow, thank God for them, because it allowed me to check myself and realize that people are watching a snippet of my life. And because of how I position myself on the internet, there are a lot of people who think that they know me, like they're friends with me. It's like almost like parasocially kind of vibes. But that's, you know, how I position myself, because my work is about showcasing my own vulnerability. And I recognize that. And so first thing is, you know, I will not be for everyone. And second of all, I say this to my partner whenever I'm in a ranting mode. I say, do you have 3 minutes? Because all I need to do is rant. You don't have to say anything in return. I just need to rant. And I'll say all of the things that I need to say. And then I will sometimes say this at the end. I'm going to post about this on social media. And then my partner will ask me, is that something that your higher self will do? And then I'll check myself and be like, no, like she wouldn't post that. Like I'm angry and I'm acting from a reactive place. And this is just going to fuel, it's just going to trigger someone else. It's not coming from a loving place. And that's how I know that that part of myself doesn't need to be shown on social media. It's a journey of that. And then plus therapy will probably help.
Can I ask a follow-up question about that?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think people were missing in that post? Like, because I understand the cultural nuance as a Filipino woman.
Yeah.
Like I know that Filipino moms are extremely blunt. They say what they mean what they say. But the way that they show love is they provide for you through material goods. And so I feel that's the story I'm creating in my own head of what non-Filipino or first or second generational Filipinos probably won't understand. Yeah. But in what other ways do you think were you misunderstood in that post? Like from a snippet that people might not understand about who you really are?
Yeah, I think someone had commented about how it's manipulation, right?
Wow.
It's manipulation. It's emotional manipulation. Or it's like, they were like, if this is the way that someone loves, then I don't want to be loved like that, right? And it was just, I really took a step back because for context, me and my mom have had a really, really tumultuous relationship since I was like 15 years old. I will be the first person to be like, mom, like you were XYZ and you hurt me. But I think now in this point of my life, I'm thinking, wow, like the reason why my mom does that is because that's probably how her mom gave her love, like through material goods, through putting food on the table. That's probably the only expression of love that my mom knows how to share. And I need to meet her in the middle. while also knowing my boundaries. And I think this like binary way of thinking that this is what healing looks like, you're either like loving and hitting all of my love languages or you're not, and you're like, you know, it doesn't work. And I think this is why when I talk to people about, you know, seeking mental health resources, like the cultural nuance is so important. So I say find a therapist that looks like you, probably holds like similar beliefs than you, shares like gender identity, like find someone that can reach that cultural nuance, because you're right, from that post, for people who don't share that identity, it can come off a completely different way. I watched it back today and I was like, no, I get it. Like, I get how you make that assumption. But it's also like, it's just different. And that's what I love about the human journey. It's going to look different to everyone else. So, yeah.
I love that. I loved how you broke down. This is who my mom was as a kid. Mm-hmm. This is how I was raised. This was my culture, and this is where I'm coming from, like a place of empathy, compassion, and love. Mm-hmm. And I think that oftentimes we do see love and healing in a very selfish way. Like, unless it feels good to me, I'm unwilling to understand your perspective. And I feel like activism cannot be done in that way. Like, change cannot be done in that way, where you really do have to be able to sit back and have a sense of empathy, because what you give is an outflow of who you really are. You know, it's so powerful. And I don't know, that's what I love about your content. Like, I remember, I think you wrote somewhere in a piece that you wrote, I haven't seen other people who looked like me in the influencing space, in the artistry space, and I wanted to express all of who I am in that place. Yeah. And was it always easy to embrace the Filipino heritage? I know you grew up in New York, but like, was that always something that came easy to you? Or was that something that was a journey in process?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I used to feel like there was something fundamentally wrong with me.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I felt in elementary school, middle school. Something was fundamentally wrong with me. And I remember being like 7 years old. My mom sat me down and she had like, I remember she was a maid and a nanny. So she had like wrinkles on her hands, like from overworking. And she told me, you know, when you grow up, you have to work really, really hard, because the truth of the reality is that white people will make more money than you, and they will get farther than you. She told me this at a really young age, and I really remember that. And she said, that's why mommy has to work overtime, and that's why I don't get to see you as often, which was true. I didn't get to see my mom a lot as a child. And so now, you know, in the work that I do, I think, well, like looking back now, as I said that story, I'm like, wow, it doesn't have to be like that. I don't have to live that way at all.
Wow.
You know, it's, but when it comes to my Filipino identity, there's a lot of conflicting feelings of like, I feel really angry sometimes because I'm like, why did my mom have to leave her home country? You know, and then feeling grateful because I'm here. And then feeling angry again at the Filipino government. You know, there's so many feelings about it. And now recently there's a lot of like debate online because, you know, as this recording is on June 12th, but there's something going on TikTok where this girl wore like a stole with a Filipino flag on it. And apparently in the Philippines, that's illegal. But in America, like, no one cares. Everyone wears that for graduation. And there's a lot of heated back and forth about what it means to be Filipino. And see, those are the discussions where I need to take a step back, because discourse like that is just not what I like to do, because in a society where we're fighting for our identities and, you know, it's just, yeah, I just need to know, like, when is it my turn to step back from the discourse when it comes to who's more Filipino? What does this mean for my Filipino identity? And I don't know when to say something. I don't know. You can tell by my answer that it's a paradox at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult because I feel like Filipino identity, when you really break it down and do the research, there has been hundreds of years of colonialism and so many, like, my ancestry is Portuguese, Spanish, Native, like, a lot under the sun, like different islands. We've talked about this, you and I, in private, but I think that, like, I'm only now reading about Filipino history, like Jose Rizal, like the Filipino liberation movement, how that came about, like through the pen. And it's just really interesting, but I know we're a little bit over because we had scheduled like a 40-minute podcast episode and we're 45 minutes in. So I want to be respectful of your time, Kim. But in closing, if you were to speak to that one Filipino entrepreneur, AAPI entrepreneur, who's listening to this and thinking, how do I balance community care and self-care? What's one piece of advice that you can give to her to start if she feels lost or confused or burnt out right now?
I think the first piece of advice and the only piece of advice I have is knowing that you are not doing it alone, right? You're not doing it alone. You have an army of people who, A, want to support you, and B, an army of a network who want to uplift you. I've always said this about myself, like, there's no way I would be in this position right now without community. There's no way. I've had so many people help me along the way, but what's really helped me tune into that is being willing to ask for help. Like, oh my God, I'm burnt out. Oh my goodness, I can't do it all alone. And I feel like I'm sinking, but I need to be doing this for community. See, that's an opportunity for us to reach out to our network and ask, well, how can we do this together? Or how can I want to do this project so bad, but I cannot do it all by myself. Can you head this project? And if you can't do it, let's ask someone else. And I think that, you know, makes the journey just so much more fun. And it makes us realize that we're a mycelium network. Like, we need each other.
Yep. That's so good. Thanks, Kim. I appreciate you. I want to acknowledge you before we turn off this recording for just your honesty, your vulnerability, your transparency and where you've come and how far you've gone and how far you will go, and for just being your vibrant you. Like, you're such a powerful light, and so I'm grateful.
Oh, thank you. And likewise, I hope we connect together soon. It was so nice. This was a great conversation.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.